So what I thought we would do to start with, I had some material that I've taught a version of before called Christian Home Builder that's family-based questions and topics. And it's about 12 or 13 weeks of material that relate to a lot of the things we put on the board. We won't cover all of them, but at least we can knock out some of them, and then we could say, okay, what's left? What do we need to talk about? Because there was a lot up there. I'm also one of those weirdos who has to give sources for all my material because I'm the plagiarism police. It was actually some free material developed by Stafford North at OC. I've changed it so much now that I think only the titles are still the same from the material he wrote. But I did steal it from him, so I thought I would at least mention it. I think it's free online out there somewhere, too, on the OC website. Okay, so the first lesson is titled At Home with the Master, and it's kind of trying to set a baseline conversation of what do we mean when we say family, and how does the Bible define a family? And to accomplish that, what we're going to look at is the family of Jesus himself. If you had to pick a family, maybe I should have started with this, if you had to pick a family in the Bible for the model family, are there any that you would pick? Are there any families in the Bible that you're like, that's the perfect family? It's actually a hard question when you think about it. I always laugh when people say stuff like, I believe in traditional biblical family values. And I'm like, have you read any of the families in the Bible? They're terrible. Abraham, it's a mess. Isaac, it's a mess. Jacob, it's a mess. Solomon, it's a mess. David, it's a mess. So it's actually hard. It's easier to find messed up families in the Bible than it is to find what we would think of as normal families. Jesus' family seems okay, I guess, but it's odd to say the least, okay? How does Jesus' family get started? What's the first thing we know? I will stare at you awkwardly. You start in Matthew 1, and we get introduced to this family. What do we know about it?
Not married.
They're not married yet. That's always a good place to start, right? Not married with a kid on the way. You know, it's a little more complicated than that, isn't it? But it's a strange beginning to the family of the Savior of the universe. Right up front, we have this unwed couple who are engaged. In Jewish culture, engagement is a little more serious than American culture engagement, to be fair. But still, they're not married. And she's told by an angel, you will have a child, and surprise, it's going to be a big deal. Joseph is likewise thrilled by that, which tells us, in simple terms, Jesus was adopted, more or less, right? Mary is his mother, but Joseph kind of got stuck with that decision. Or another way to say it, Mary was chosen, but Joseph chose.
Wasn't Joseph kind of doubtful, too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, hey, I don't know that I'm believing this deal.
Well, yeah, I mean, at the risk of being crass, I'm sure it is not the first awkward conversation between a man and a woman. It's like, I'm pregnant, and I don't know what happened. And and Joseph is incredulous for obvious reasons. Like, that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And it takes an angel to say, that's what happened. He's ready to put her away privately, which seems to mean he wants to end the engagement in a way that doesn't get her taken out and put to death for adultery. You know, because obviously, if he says, well, she's an adulterer, that's the end. No one's going to ask, well, what about the angel thing? That's the end of the conversation. So he's trying to do right by her in a generous way. He's going to put her out separately and privately. And it does take an angel to change that narrative. So the first thing I would want to point out about family from the family of Jesus is that the perfect white picket fence nuclear family that we're told exists almost never exists. Instead, family is a strange combination of things you choose and things you don't choose. Okay? Part of your family are things you picked. Part of your family are things you didn't pick. So Let's see if you're following along. What are some things that you pick about your family?
Not a whole lot.
Yeah, no, it's a short list.
Who you marry.
Like your spouse, you pick the person sitting next to you, right? That's a choice you made. You get some say over when and if and how many kids you have to a degree. You get some say over your career and how much time you want to spend on it and where you want to live. You get some say over some of that. You get some say over the types of interaction you have with extended family. So do you see your parents weekly, monthly, yearly? That was a question. Show of hands. Who sees their parents every week, their adult parents? Who's more like every month? Who's more like, well, I think I saw them this year? Who's more like parents? So, the level of interaction you get, it's kind of up to you. So, there are things that are your choice and there are things that are not. What are things that are not your choice?
Who your parents are,
right? They got some say in you. You get no say in them and all their baggage. Huh? And your siblings. Brothers, sisters, all that jazz that you didn't get asked. You never will. All right? They're, you're just along for the ride. Even though you get some say in having kids, how many, when, so forth, you don't get to pick what they're going to be like.
No.
At all. This big lie we're told that parents shape their children into who they're going to be. No. They all come pre-programmed as sinners.
I don't know.
No. It's not quite that bad, but I can say Lucas is exactly like Celine and Calvin is exactly like me, and it shows every day. And we didn't get to pick that. My mom thinks it's funny, but we don't get to pick that. So there's parts of every family that's chosen and parts that's not. How much time do you spend with your kids? That's actually on the choice part. How much time do you invest in your marriage? That's actually on the choice part, you see. So a lot of the relationship is actually in your court to determine. You get some say in it. A lot of the variables are not, okay? If you have baggage from your parents or your brother's in prison or, you know, there's things that are outside of your control, right? But there's a lot of it that still is. And that weird combination is what family is. I think that's the most basic sense of it. And that's what we get out of the Jesus story of family. There's some choosing and there's some being chosen for. And it turns out that's all of human life, but it's definitely family. Okay. Next thing I want to talk about just for a few minutes from the Jesus' birth story is who's included in the story and who's not. So I know it's not Christmas, but let's try to think back for a minute. Name some of the people that are in the nativity story, any part of it. Who are the characters?
Three wise men.
Okay, we've got some wise men of indeterminate number. Yeah, three, obviously. Yeah. Got some wise men.
Shepherds.
Joseph and Mary.
Yeah, we'll probably ought to include them and baby Jesus too. Yeah. Way to go for the low-hanging fruit there.
Well, yeah.
The parents, I think they were there. Yep.
God
was there.
Some animals.
Some animals. Yeah, farm animals. Got to have that. Yep. Angels. Got to have angels involved. Okay. Also, if you read like further around it, before they end up in a stable, Mary visits some people that are in her family. Who does she visit? You know,
Elizabeth. And John.
Elizabeth, yeah, who'd be the mother of John and Zacharias, her husband, live in a different location. Who's not mentioned in that story? Who's not in that story that showed up? You guys just had a kid. Who was not in this story that showed up in your hospital room within the first, you know, week or so of having a baby?
It was COVID.
Oh, nobody. So COVID, that would be one. Yeah, that's different.
There's
okay.
A doctor. desire.
No doctor, yeah. There's
that. Probably like eight people in our operating room, but we didn't
know. Okay, fine. Way to run my point. When you finally were allowed to show your baby to people, who was first in line?
Grandparents.
Yeah, grandparents, right? New parents. Joseph's parents and Mary's parents are in no part of this story. Is that peculiar? Aunts and uncles? None. They don't make an appearance in any part of the narrative. So here's kind of the point. It's an unexpected group of family. Mary is strengthened by her extended family, but you never see her parents. It's Elizabeth giving her encouragement. Mary is ignored by her in-laws, but celebrated by strangers. If you've ever heard my weird version of the nativity story, I'll tell you that in-law bit. It's not explicit in the text, but when they go to Bethlehem, I don't think the word inn means a ramada. There was no room in the inn. It wasn't a Motel 8. When you traveled in the ancient world, they didn't have like inns like that. You stayed with family, which was the whole point. They went to Bethlehem because that's where his family was from. Okay, the word inn is a word that means kind of like an extended family home. And the word for stable is the word that describes the ground floor of the home. Palestinians' home were split level, two-floor homes. Okay, the family lived on top, and the animals lived in the barn, which was the bottom floor of the house. Okay, so what I think it's saying, I don't think they went to Motel 8 and there wasn't a room, so they went down to the parking garage. I think it's saying they went to stay with family. Family didn't make room for them, and so they stayed downstairs in the barn.
Well, they were loved.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the way it is, what, I mean, think about priority. It's Thanksgiving and everybody's over at your house and you're assigning rooms, okay? Who gets to sleep in the garage and who gets the bed? Obviously pregnant ladies in the garage. Wait a second, that's kind of weird. Like, that seems not the case unless pregnant lady is like a pariah, like not on the up and up with the family. And so that's a little speculation, okay, just to be fair. But the way I read that story is that Joseph's family, not impressed with Joseph and Mary. You guys can stay with the oxen and the sheep downstairs. Grandma's got the bed upstairs, and that's the way it's going to be. So ignored by her in-laws, but then who shows up to see the baby? Shepherds, which is, you know, the one nice thing about COVID is you didn't have to worry about, you know, all the germy people coming to see your baby the first day because no one was allowed, right? Mary's first visitor, shepherds, the world's cleanest people, right? No, straight out of the field, right? In come the shepherds. Didn't even wash their hands. Let's see that baby. Mary's thrilled. So, but that's who's here. She's advised by prophets, Simeon and Anna, but not, again, no parents in the picture. Later on, even who are Jesus's role models? He goes to the temple and he's debating the scriptures with the priests and stuff. We never hear about him interacting with aunts and uncles and grandparents and stuff like that. It's an unexpected family. And furthermore, since I'm on the speculation train for just a minute, that story when they go to the temple and Jesus is 12 or whatever, that's the last time you ever hear about Joseph. Later, you hear about Mary, you hear about Jesus' brothers. There's never any reference to Joseph and the rest of Jesus' life. So the speculation is, you know, ancient mortality rates, nobody lived very long. And Joseph was a day laborer by trade. He was a construction worker. Maybe he died. Entirely possible. Or maybe someone else. Or maybe he's there and he's just not mentioned. But he's at least not an important part of the story that he's never mentioned again after adolescence. Unexpected family. Okay, so the second point then, first point is family is both chosen and choice. And then the second thing we'd observe is that family is often unexpected. That the people who make up your family are not always, again, this white picket fence nuclear family that you imagined you would have. The people who show up are your family, by and large. And people are hungry for that. How often do we hear the expression, we're like a family, applied to everything? People you work with, we're like a family. people you go to the gym with, we're like a family. Your neighborhood, we're like a family. Like everybody, that tells, I don't think all of them are like a family. I think we're craving that. Like it's us saying we wish it was. We don't have a close relationship that we thought we'd have with our parents or our brothers and sisters. And so we treat neighbors and strangers and so forth as family because we're really craving family. And so in movies, in literature, in our own conversation, just constantly, oh, it's like a family. NBA basketball team, oh, we're like a family. Until that guy got traded. Now it's really like a family. So it's family is often the unexpected people who show up. And there are other people in your life, some not related by blood at all, some that are, some distantly that got more involved, some close that are less, right? Who has been an unexpected family to you, and what's the significance of that?
Guys I work with.
Okay, guys I work with are close?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What makes that family? I mean, what makes you say that?
Oh, we spend such time together.
A lot of time, okay. But yeah, okay, people you work with. And the interesting feature there you mentioned, okay, what is it? Time. You spend time together. One of the dumbest expressions in all of modern family literature is the expression quality time. As if like if you spend 5 really good minutes with your kids, then it's okay that you didn't spend any other time with your kids. So quality time. Kids don't have a quality time barometer. They just want time. They just want to do stuff with you. Really stupid stuff most of the time. Calvin had me helping him scotch tape a construction paper Minecraft character he had made yesterday to the wall. I don't know. I still don't know what it is, and it fell several times. But that was like the best part of his day. It was me in his room with a lot of scotch tape and a mess. That Celine gets to clean up when she gets back today from the airport. Time. It's not even about... Nothing of substance happened in that time. It's going to go in the trash very soon. But time. What else? Who's unexpected family and what did you learn from that?
You guys, the church.
Aww.
Well, no, seriously, when we're so far.
Because we have no other family here.
Well, no, that's not why, but I mean, when he had surgery over the summer, we couldn't have done any of this. We leaned on you guys a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's the people that show up. Mm-hmm. Again, time and dependability is kind of what constitutes family. Who's there when you need them? And it doesn't have to be a negative thing towards people that live further away. It just the reality is the people that are there in your little hula hoop of influence are the people that end up being family. When my brother had very similar brain surgery a couple years back in Nashville, he lives all the way out in Nashville, so not a lot of folks from the Oklahoma side of my family went out there. I did. But in the waiting room for the 8-9 hour surgery or whatever, which is super fun, right? It was me, his wife, and all the people they work with at Lipscomb University, right? So it's their coworkers in the office that showed up and sat with them. It's the people that showed up, right? That was who took time to be there. They had no skin in the game. They were there. So time and showing up. Yeah, but no, there's definitely people like, the fact that you get handed people and you're related to them doesn't mean your personalities necessarily mesh. I mean, that's the choice and the not choice part of it. That there's you choose how you get to interact with them and how you're going to behave towards them, but that they're in that little circle of people you didn't pick, and you don't pick their behaviors and attitude. You can try, that'll end poorly, mm-hmm. But who they are. Even among your kids. Love all your kids equally and don't play favorites, but you're going to connect with one or two of them differently than the others because personalities are personalities. As I've already mentioned, Lucas is exactly like his mother and Calvin is exactly like me. And so there's sometimes that I just get Calvin, whereas sometimes Lucas is like an alien to me. Whereas vice versa, Celine will say, I have no idea what your youngest is doing right now. It makes no sense. I'm like, oh, it makes perfect sense. Yeah, it's literally logical. And then she'll connect with Lucas on an emotional level that I try, I can't. You know, it's okay. I mean, that's part of it. Don't show favorites. Don't say, and now you get the coat of many colors and you get to, you know, be the bad kid. Don't do that. But there are going to be different relationships because we didn't pick them. We choose to love them. We didn't pick who they were going to be when they were handed to us. How many of the Tylers have now? Yeah. Watch that Jim Gaffigan routine where he talks about having the kids. I can't remember if when he has his fourth or his fifth kid that he says, if you want to know what it's like having a fourth kid, imagine you're drowning and someone hands you a kid. And that's okay. But I'm sure you've got enough variety there that you look and you're like, okay, not the same, right? Okay, let me make one more set of points here, and then we'll kind of land the plane. What I think you can take away from this is the process of creating family is an important process for you to engage in. Jesus grew up in a created family, in a sense. Okay, it was a little bit odd. And he becomes a master of creating family. Okay, when you see Jesus later on, we only get a few glimpses of Jesus and his related family, blood family. There's the wedding at Cana, has kind of a weird conversation with his mom about wine. There's Mark 12, where they thought he was crazy and said, would you stop that? And then there's a throwaway line in John 7 that says, even his brothers didn't believe him. Like, so there's not a whole lot of references in the Gospels to Jesus interacting with brothers and sisters and mom, and Joseph is completely absent. However, there are some references to family. Listen to Matthew 12. While he was speaking to the people, behold, his mother and his brothers stood outside asking to speak to him. But he replied to the man who told him, who is my mother and who are my brothers? And stretching out his hand toward his disciples, he said, here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. He created family out of these disciples he traveled with. In a way that I don't think he was disrespectful to his mother and brothers here. Even at the cross, he's still saying, you know, take care of my mother kind of stuff. I mean, he loves his mother. But he also created family out of the people he encountered on a regular basis, the people he spent time with, his disciples. And he cherished that. Here again, Matthew 19, 28 and 29. Jesus said to them, truly I say to you, in the new world, when the Son of Man will sit on his glorious throne, you who have followed me will also sit on 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. And everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or children or lands for my name's sake will receive a hundredfold and will inherit eternal life. Don't hear anybody preach on that last bit, but I think it's very fascinating that Jesus says following Christ will sometimes estrange you from family because you'll have convictions and choices that they may or may not understand. But then he says, if you want it, you will get more family out of the deal. That if you want it, you get this church family that you referred to, this other group of people that you connect to, being a minister and so growing up a minister's kid and then being a minister. I've got like grandparents all over the country. I mean, almost nowhere I can go where there wouldn't be somebody that's like, oh, come stay with us. Right? Remember little Ben? He used to crawl under the pews and spill his juice cup. Yeah, he's a preacher now. Come stay with us. Like, there's these people just all over the planet who are connected to us in that way and created family relationships. Also, being as a minister, you almost never live where your family is. This is as close as I've ever been to my folks. And so, who was it that babysat our kids? It wasn't grandparents, it was church people, and still is. My emergency contact at Homer School is not my parents or my brother, it's Naomi, the church secretary. Like, she's the one who goes gets my kid if I'm hit by a bus, and sometimes does, without the bus. But the kids know when she pulls up, oh, yeah, that's Miss Naomi. Oh, is that your grandmother? Sure. Yeah, just put me in the car. And off they go. Right? So you get more family out of it, but you have to create it. So remember earlier discussion, who was the unexpected family in your life? If you want family, you have to be the unexpected family in other people's life. It's not all about, why aren't you investing in me? Why aren't you spending time with me? Why aren't you dependable for me? Why can't I count on you? Well, are you dependable to anybody? Can they count on you? Do you make yourself available to people? Do you put time in there? Family is created. And so I think the question I want to leave you with today, what are you doing to create family? Another thing I do sometimes as a minister, which is always awkward and never fun, sometimes somebody will leave a church and go somewhere else, and when that happens, a lot of times I'll call them up and say, hey, let's go out to lunch. I just want to know if everything's okay and is there a problem, and kind of get the scoop on it. Exit interview, church membership style. And it's interesting how often I'll hear, well, I never really made any friends there. I never really connected with anybody. And then I'll ask, which Bible class were you in? Well, we didn't go to class. Which ministry did you connect with? Well, we didn't do any of the ministry thing. I was like, oh. I'm not saying it's always their fault, but you got to kind of put yourself out there a little bit. If you want to make friends, this is actually in the book of Proverbs, he who would have friends must show himself friendly. If you want family, you're going to have to act like a family to somebody. You're going to have to invest in some people. You can't wait for an engraved invitation that says, would you like to be my brother in Christ? It's not going to happen, right? It's just you show up and you change their tire one day, and now you're brothers for life. And Blake has been a guy for me from the time I got here who is just available to hear me gripe about all of you anytime I want. He was the guy and has been for 2 years the guy that I'll talk to when I'm having a crummy day. And then I'll get this super sweet text message later in the day. Ben, you're doing so good. I'm like, oh, I am. And it just makes me feel so warm and fuzzy. And that's Blake's job. And he's just been there and invested in that way. It didn't come with an engraved invitation. He just said, well, Ben looks like he's having a terrible day. I'll go tell him he's great. And I like people who tell me I'm great. So obviously that worked out. You see what I mean? You have to put yourself out there a little bit. I don't know how to create family if you're waiting for it to happen to you. It's not going to fall in your lap most of the time. Once in a while, but most of the time, no. Thoughts or comments? What are you doing to create family? Both, you know, you can talk about your immediate family, your kids, your spouse, or we can talk further than that. Church relationships, work relationship, personal relationship. What are you doing? What works?